I'm loved by God, and realizing what that looks like the further I go. I'm recovering from spiritual and emotional abuse, addiction to food and work and control. I've had issues with pornography and alcohol and rage and depression and panic attacks. Several things before we really get started tonight. First of all, Sally, thank you again for last week. We've been at this for a long time, and there's a word that comes to my mind. Every now and then we have a banner night, you know, just one that you think, okay, that was a defining moment in Celebrate Recovery / Pathway. Last Sunday night was a defining moment. Thank you. Thank you for that. And also, Nami mentioned this, that we're going to be exploring, playfully, hopefully, exploring what it's like to be with extended or family of origin, whatever you want to call it, during the holidays. We're going to look at that for 3 weeks. And then, of course, we're not going to meet Christmas Eve because that's when people spend their time together for the holidays. But then, on New Year's Eve, we're going to have a quiz. We're going to have a quiz, and it's going to be about the lessons that we had during the month of December, except instead of it being open book quiz, it's going to be an open mic quiz, to where if you want, you can come up front and you can share the good and the bad and the ugly or whatever you want to share about your experiences, you know, and we might follow that with a healing service or a... We might call 911, or I don't know what we'll do. But we'll have us a chance, we'll give ourselves a chance as the Pathway family to process, you know, what we've been through. In the gathering this morning, most everybody here knows what the gathering is. We meet at 11 o'clock right here in a circle. It's usually more like an egg than a circle, but anywhere in the back. And we had the most interesting conversation about what we're going to be talking about. I said, you all need to help me for these lessons that are coming up, and so get some real good insight. So, but tonight we finish our series on grace, and we've had 4 sessions on grace, and this is winding it up, although I don't even like the sound of that. We're winding up our sessions on grace. Really? Like we can put a period at the end of it. Well, we got that now, you know, and that's not the case at all. But at some point you have to change the subject, but it's all grace filled. So tonight we want to talk about grace / God in us. And as usual, the manuscript is over there if you want to get a copy afterwards. If you get down to the last one, tell me and we'll make more copies. Grace, God in us. And I'm going to read it tonight. I love to write, and I do better at writing than I do just speaking, and as Ron will attest to, when I speak freelance, I go down too many rabbit trails. I'll get an amen out of him. See? Ron calls me on my rabbit trails. So when I write it and then I read it, there are not as many rabbit trails. So I may stop and comment from time to time. Look over there. But I'm going to read what I wrote, and I'll read the same thing you'll get when you look over there. So here we are at the close of our 5 sessions on grace. If we've not discovered anything else, we found out that grace is not something God hands out like Halloween treats. Grace is God with us, fully invested. We also have figured out that He doesn't hang out with us just to improve our demeanor or our behavior. He's with us because we're His beloved. No ulterior motives, no end game. No, nothing else. God hangs out with us. He's with us because we're His beloved. But we also have discovered, and it took us 3 sessions to kind of unpack this, we've also discovered that we're not good with grace. We struggle with it. We struggle with it because it constantly reminds us that we're powerless and actually control nothing. We're all in here in recovery because we thought we were in control, right? And then we said what? When we came in is the first step we read. We're powerless over addictions and compulsive behaviors. But we struggle against grace because we want to be in control. And I don't think that ever goes away. I think we die wanting to be in control. That's just part of our humanity. It's just, look at me there. I'm trying to be in control again. It's two different things. So we're not good with grace because it reminds us that we're powerless and actually in control of nothing. We can't fix ourselves. We can't fix others. We're no better than the person next to us. And without God full on present in our lives, we are in a major fix. I need to say that again. Without God full on present in our lives, we are in a major fix. God cannot be a hobby. He can't be something we do every now and then. He can't be just, you know, on speed dial. Without God full on present in our lives, we are in a major fix. So tonight we want to explore, so what does it look like to have God full on present in our lives? What does that look like? And so there's three things we're going to talk about. There's no scientific evidence for this, so don't ask me to give you, you know, a formula or any kind of factual, tangible proof. There's no scientific evidence for this, but in some strange way, grace is readily recognizable. Think about that. Grace is readily recognizable. Seconds into a conversation, you know when you're in the presence of a gracious person. Take the converse. When you're with a person who is very selfish and very self-centered, I describe it, my analogy, it's almost like they have this hypodermic needle and they stick it right into the center of you and they start drawing the life out of you. The longer the conversation goes, the more you feel yourself being depleted, and you can't even explain exactly how that's taking place. They may have a big old smile on their face. They may have the smoothest tone. They may never actually ask for anything. But still, you feel the life being sucked out of you. That's the converse. When you're in the presence of a gracious person, you know it for sure. They may not wear the proper badge. You know, they may not have any kind of certification. They may not have the right religious affiliation or the required wardrobe, but you can feel it instantly. There is something different about that person. And you can tell it. This is a rabbit trail, sorry. Robbie, and I've talked about this before, but Robbie had an uncle, her mother's brother, Morris. And the first time I ever met that man, I knew within 5 seconds that I was in the presence of a gracious person. He didn't know me from Adam. He only knew that I was dating his niece. That's all he knew. And the way he treated me and the way he talked to me, it was as if, and I'll just read it here. You feel like they've been anxiously waiting for days just to bump into you. Like you've completely made their day. Have you met people like that? That when you talk to them, they're like, wow, I've waited all day to get a chance to talk to you and to see you. And you just feel empowered and you feel encouraged. So they enhance your life. They encourage and empower you. Somehow life becomes more worth living when they're around. With them, you fall in love's embrace and you want to stay. So there's no scientific proof for any of this. There's no formula that you can write down if they pass these five tests, but you just know, you know, you know, you know. In your heart of hearts, you know the person who I'm with right now is a gracious person. I think that's cool. I think it's cool that grace, even though we can't mathematically or scientifically explain it, grace is that obvious when it's in a person. That you know it when you're in the presence of grace. You know God is fully present in the person facing you. This, if you want a quote for tonight, I know I wrote this, but I think it's pretty good. I need to list arrogance to one of my... No, not really. You know God is fully present in the person facing you because the person in front of you is fully present with you. Think about that. You know God is fully present in that because that's our definition of grace, right? Grace is not a treat that God hands out. God is grace is God fully present in somebody. And so you know that God is fully present in that person when they're fully present in you. No ulterior motives, no end game. They don't try to fix you. It's just they're completely engaged in you. And that's how you know that God is completely engaged in them. This changes the way we do community. This changes the way that we do marriage and the way we do parenting. And the, you know, it changes maybe the way we do the holidays in the next couple of weeks. Think about that. You know God is fully present in the person facing you because the person in front of you is fully present with you. This is grace. This is grace. The second thing I want to talk about, or we want to talk about tonight, is so what happens when grace gains a foothold in you? Look in the mirror. How do you know grace? How do you know God's present in you? Are there indicators where you can tell that God is present and active in you? And I think we need to remind ourselves, remember, this doesn't have anything to do with anything you've done or are doing to better yourself. Did everybody catch that? Grace has nothing to do with what you're doing or planning on doing to better yourself. Grace is not the result of disciplines. Grace is not the result of praying louder or longer, or studying the Bible more deeply, or being more diligent in your church attendance, or minding your behavior and practicing better. It's not behavior modification. That's not what grace is. All of this is just fluff. It's cotton candy fluff compared to grace. God full on present in a life. So here, let me just ask some questions. Are you finding it more natural to love and accept those you once avoided? I'm going to ask each question twice. Are you finding it more natural? I didn't say easier, but are you finding it more natural to love and accept those you once avoided? Here's another question. Is forgiveness becoming second nature? Is forgiveness becoming second nature? Is your tendency toward generosity growing and you can't really figure out how or why? Is your tendency toward generosity growing and you can't figure out how or why? And is all this happening while you're not looking? Think about it. It snuck up on you. All of this happened while you're not looking. There is a power, a solidity that comes with God's presence. Think about that. Some of the most potent, powerful people, when they walk into the room changes. And it's not because they flash a badge. You know, I'm the chief person here. I've earned the highest degree. I earned the most money. I live in the biggest house. Has nothing to do with that. When that person walks in the room, there's a power and a solidity that enters that room, and you can't explain it. Could be that's happening to you, that you're discovering that when you enter a room, that people are responding differently to you, and you didn't do anything to make that happen. It just happened. Could be God's present in you. You face life unintimidated by that which once made you run and hide. Is that a possibility? You're starting to face life unintimidated by that which once made you run and hide. It's like an unexplainable courage takes over. Maybe it has something to do with what John wrote, where he said, perfect love casts out fear. I don't know. Could be. You know, grace gets hold. With a lot of people, it's like they wake up one day and they realize they've been transformed. They're not like the person they were. It's not as if God has gotten bigger inside them. It's more like they've gotten bigger because God's inside them. And there's a momentum to all this, as if it has a life of its own. And it's almost, it leans toward covert or stealthy or camouflage. It's rarely ever intentional or in your face. This is the way it's been with me. God did not send me some sort of memo and say, this is my plan of attack with you. This is how we're going to get rid of your selfishness and how we're going to make you a more gracious person. So follow these steps. Hang in there with me, blah, blah, blah. I didn't get a scripture verse. I didn't get, you know, no handwriting on the wall, no burning bush talking to me. It's like God is a sneaky booger. He just loves to sneak around and do all these good things. And then you wake up one day and you look in the mirror and you say, I'm different. How'd I get this way? And you don't know how. You don't know. It's God's presence. Don't you know the disciples had to have that? They hung out with the Son of God for 3 years and they had to wake up routinely and look at the other one and the other one makes some sort of comment about their life being changed and this one saying, you too, huh? When did that happen? I don't know. I just woke up one day and I realized it, that this was going on in me. So God does his work undercover, but it's potent, it's powerful. And we find ourselves becoming more generous, and we find ourselves becoming better listeners, and we find ourselves becoming more forgiving. We find ourselves being more aware of other people and how they feel and where they're at. It just happens. But here's the third thing. An even more spectacular version of this magic takes place when a bunch of grace people come together. And that's what happens in the gathering on Sunday morning. And that's what happens in Pathway every Sunday night. A bunch of crazy grace people come together. You know? We are crazy. I guess you knew that. We're certifiable crazy. I mean, to most of the people out there, wait till the holidays come up and you spend time with your extended family. They're going to look at you like you're crazy. And part of it is due to the fact that we are crazy. But the other part's going to have to do with the fact that grace is active in us. God is present and grace is active. And people don't know how to handle that. They don't know what to do with it. So this magic is more spectacular than anything that happens with any of us individually when we're out there. This is where it gets really cool. Jesus said something about two or more gathering in his name. And I always just took that as, you know, don't get discouraged when your crowds are down. That's what I always thought it meant. You know, your crowds are down. Well, he said two or more. You know, that meets the bare minimum. So just keep on trucking. You're going to make it. You'll get bigger crowds. That is not a consolation thing. That is a profound statement. Where two or more people gather in my name, I'm there with them, and there's going to be big magic happen. There's going to be big time stuff that goes on. It's like when a handful of loaves and fishes multiplied to feed thousands, or a pinch of leaven expands a lump of dough, or a tiny mustard seed grows into this huge tree. It's like an entire community in the book of Acts that brings all their goods to a common storehouse and gives it to people who needs it. That's big magic. That's big grace. That's like, how did we get here? How did we wind up doing this stuff? You know? That's what happens in Pathway. That's what happens when somebody can come in here off the street and say, I am the most despicable, terrible person you could ever imagine. I know you're going to ask me to leave when I tell you my story. And they tell their story, and we hug the stuffings out of them. No, you're not getting away from us. We're going to love you. But you just heard my story. Yeah. Yeah, and that means we love you even more. So, I don't know. I have learned about grace by being here with grace people. You have taught me what grace is. And now I'm just parroting back to you what you have taught me. I'm just sharing it back with you in written form, what you've taught me. So let's talk for just a second before we close. Let's talk about what grace is and what it isn't, okay? Grace, God's presence in community, doesn't defend or consolidate. Instead, it creates and it invents. We don't have any set rules here in Pathway that we say, no, these are non-negotiables, you have to keep these. Well, if they're rules, I guess you could say, yeah, you're going to come and be real, and you're going to come and get loved. If those are rules, those are the funniest sounding rules I've ever heard. But if we have rules, those are our rules. But we're not here to defend a set of rules or a set of beliefs. We're not here to circle the wagons and defend ourselves from the world. We're here to create and invent new ways of doing grace. Grace here generates and motivates kindness, generosity, and forgiveness instead of some squeaky clean behavior or airtight doctrine. How many of y'all have had squeaky clean behavior all week? Didn't think so. How many of y'all have been loved by God this week? Aha! Caught you. See? There you go. No, we don't have squeaky clean behavior or airtight doctrines, but we have generosity and we have kindness and we have forgiveness. Grace inspires instead of discouraging. And instead of constantly reviewing and perfecting what's been chanted for years, grace is revelatory, unleashing truth otherwise missed or ignored. How many new ideas have we discovered in Pathway? How many things have we heard for the first time or discovered for the first time? I lost count a long time ago. I have learned more here than I ever did in college and than I ever did in seminary and than I ever did in 25 years as a senior pastor. I have learned more here than ever. All of that stuff put together. It's because grace is revelatory. It discovers new things all the time because we keep exploring it. It unleashes truth that we otherwise would miss or ignore. It explores possibilities in places once deemed impossible. So for five sessions, we've been talking about grace. Let's hope that that's not as far as it gets with us. There is no life without God's fully invested presence. Anything less is artificial. Without grace, we merely survive. So I really hope that we don't say, well, okay, that's five sessions, we've done that. You know, and I picked up the papers and I put them in a little notebook, and isn't that nice? That's the little grace folder, you know, and we've got them all. We're just getting started with grace, because grace is not a concept that you talk about. Grace is a life that you live. It's a presence that you have. It's God's presence with you, and it's your presence with other people. And you can't write a book about that, because when you go and are present with a guy named Jim, it's going to be totally different than when you go and be present with a guy named Ted. You know? And when you go be with her family for Christmas, it's going to be totally different than when you go to be with your family for Christmas, or vice versa. You know? When you go to check out at Walmart, the person in aisle 8 is not going to be the same as the person in aisle 1. Think about that. You don't learn some concept and say, there you go. Grace has endless possibilities. And so you continue to explore, and you continue to adventure, and you fall on your face. This is not something you have to get right. You fall on your face, but you get up and you do it again. I've had two times here lately where I have had people who I loved and trusted deeply who have just wounded me. And Robbie and I were talking about it the other day, and so I said, so what do? Do you give up on grace? Do you give up on friendship? Do you give up on love? Do you just become cynical again, like I used to be, and say, nobody is worth trusting? Because you trust people, you open your heart to people, you're going to get hurt every time. Sure you are. You're going to get hurt. But do you want to try any other way of living? Do you want to circle the wagons and be self-protective? Or do you want to explore the possibilities of grace with every single person and go as far with it as you can? Even if you stick your neck all the way out and they cut it off, it's like, I'm not giving up on grace. God never gave up on me. God has pursued me. That's the life I want to live. This endless pursuit of people with grace and love and generosity and kindness and listening and empathizing and understanding. We really struggled for a long time with how do you work your 12th step? We thought we've got all the other steps. We pretty much understand how to do that. How do you work your 12th step? I think we've been talking about it for 5 weeks. This is how you work your 12th step. You don't have to set the world on fire. You simply fully invest yourself in the person in front of you. That's what you do. because God fully invested himself in you and continues to do so. So there we are, 5 sessions on grace, and I think we're just getting started. But it's so cool. So cool.